the salami, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, David.
David.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. Have a tomato, Plato.
Plato.
Here's got your Toradora.
Oh, Dora.
Try the bologna, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I'll fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food will fill you.
Welcome to Say Yes to the Chef. Our guest today is Susie Gott-Segura, director of Seasonal School of Culinary Arts in Asheville, Ithaca, and Paris. I'm Chef Janice Escott. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, I'm Chef Kelly Taylor. Welcome, Susie.
Thank you
we
both.
Should say welcome back.
Welcome back.
My pleasure.
We're always very impressed when we say Asheville, Ithaca, and
Sonoma.
Paris.
And Sonoma.
And don't forget
and
Sonoma.
And Sonoma, that's right. Sonoma. Sonoma's in there, too. I love Sonoma. I mean, lived right down the road from there for many years. So this is wonderful having you back again. Let's talk a little bit about who is Susie.
Well, that's an open book waiting to be written.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I had the great fortune to grow up north of Asheville, 50 miles north of Asheville in Madison County, a county that is known for its moonshine and murders, largely, and music. Moonshine, murders, and music.
The three M's. It makes every place great.
And migrated from there to France for 20 years and then have returned. Good old Thomas Wolfe, who says you can't go home again. I would beg to differ. And I'm very pleased to be back in the Appalachian Mountains. So it's funny. Yes, I spent certainly the first several decades of my life in Appalachia with great produce that came right out of the hills. My family grew everything we ate as we were growing up, from all the vegetables to all the meats and bees, and made beer and made cheese and anything that you might want on your table. However, what was missing was that final step of how to prepare it with great finesse and put it on the table in such a way that it's a pleasure to the eye, because they were busy, you know, they were involved in cultivating, harvesting. Yes.
And it was me. I just eat everything raw at that point because I had worked so long.
So I ended up in France for 20 years. I went over actually playing Appalachian music. And after a couple of decades of doing that, came back here and started a culinary school thinking, okay, it's time to share something of France with Appalachian now. So, through many circuitous routes, I've ended up back where I started from. And it's funny because the longer you're away from home, the more you become who you are, so to speak. And it's kind of a coincidence, but I guess nothing is coincidence, that the first cookbook that I have out through traditional publisher is titled Appalachian Appetite. Mm-hmm. So a tribute, a love letter, if you will, to Appalachia, to my homeland.
Well, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
She brought it for
us. And the illustrations are magnificent. So this was just published December?
End of November, yes. It's just been out for a little over a month.
Wow, it's brand new.
Brand new.
Hot off the press.
I would like you to explain what Appalachian food is.
So that's a funny distinction if you think about, well, everyone is familiar with Southern food and soul food. We're getting more and more there. And I did set out actually to define that as much as I could in the beginning, what sets Appalachian food apart from the larger context of Southern food. Of course, there is a good bit of crossover. Anything Appalachian is also, well, I started to say is also Southern, but not necessarily, because there's Northern Appalachia as well. So most people associate Appalachian cuisine or cooking or whatever term you want to use with the mountains, the southern mountains, but there are also the northern mountains, and it's interesting to consider that. And what I've tried to do in this cookbook is to have recipes from all up and down the Appalachian chain, from Mississippi to Maine. So you do get food from the deep south, and you also get food from the north, like red flannel hash, you know, the beets that you might, well, that particular recipe is not in there. That's for the follow-up tome, which I intend to title Appalachian Encore. That's going on in my head right now. Anyway.
I'm already on to thinking about the recipes.
So I would say that the nugget of these recipes are from the Southern Mountains, because obviously that's my home. That's where I have the most contacts. And we have the great fortune to be in these gorgeous mountains, and then also to have the amazing products of the South and also that famous Southern hospitality all drawn together in a package. And that's one of the things that makes Asheville sing. It has all those elements.
Which is where you're living currently. Do you live back where you grew up?
I do. 50 miles north of Asheville, North Madison County, right next to the Tennessee border, right next to the Appalachian Trail.
So you were starting to talk about one recipe from the North, but can you give some examples of how it varies from the North and then heading down into the South, that kind of food?
Well, certainly in the South, you get a lot of pork, and meat might be more of an accent than a main course. And this is one of the things perhaps that sets Appalachian cooking apart from Southern cooking as a larger entity, is that the Appalachian folks are by and large relatively poor. And so meat might not be the focus unless they've just killed a hog or something like that. That's why you get fat back and various organs that are featured often, because it's the cheaper cuts of meat. Mm-hmm. And they are used to flavor beans, and beans might actually be the main dish, but they're so laced with that flavor of pork that they taste absolutely divine.
So are they hunters also, in addition to growers?
Very frequently, yes. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, yes.
Well, what kinds of things would they hunt?
Well, venison, of course, bear, possum, raccoon, coon hunting, rabbit, squirrel, quail, pheasant.
And you have those in your cookbook?
I have a few. My publisher...
I saw a venison meatloaf in here, which is intriguing.
Right. My publisher wanted me to feature ingredients that your average citizen could find in your average supermarket, so there's not a lot of the exotic in here. Mm-hmm. However, there are a couple of wild card recipes, such as possum pâté. I had a couple of possums inhabiting my chicken house, so I had to do something with them.
Oh.
And
that's great. Yeah.
Venison ramp meatloaf, yes, and a truffle flan, too.
Oh,
Tennessee truffle flan.
I'm curious about the possum. I have never cooked possum. I wouldn't even know where to start cooking a possum.
It's very like rabbit, flavor-wise. It's very tricky to dispose of. That's the biggest challenge. Possum has 9 lives at least, so I won't describe that process. I would say that it's best if you have a Prius, which I don't, to sneak up on one and take it out of the road. Anyway, once you have it skinned and gutted, and that's another story as well, you can just treat it like rabbit. And I sauteed mine in butter with shallots and thyme and poured in a whole bunch of white wine and baked it. And it was very much to my liking.
Yes. Well, I grew up on rabbit. My father was a hunter. That's why I always like to ask those questions. And the rabbit thing is always intriguing because we just ate rabbit like people eat chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And prepared in this very similar way.
Fried.
Put it in the oven, you know, and just very simple food and a very, very prominent in our diet. So it was one of those wonderful things that I just don't enjoy very often right now. It's hard to find rabbit.
You can find that if you are around Asheville at East Fork Farm. And there are certainly other farms that raise rabbit as well.
Mm-hmm. There are some farms around here.
Yeah, and I've had it a few times, but it's not easy to find. You have to kind of search it out.
I think it's becoming
worth it in the end.
Kind of a little trendy, though, now. Well, I went to a pop-up dinner not too long ago where they had all kinds of things that would never have been on the menu. They had squirrel. They had all these things. And I was like, what's happening? Because this was like people paid a fortune to go to this dinner. I just thought it was hilarious, actually. But they had all kinds of things, and people were eating them and trying
them. Good sign.
Them, and
good sign.
So it was an interesting evening. But I don't think that most people could find those ingredients. I agree. So I think your editor is probably right on board directing you to those things that you could actually, as a home cook, be able to make. And you have some beautiful recipes in here. I like that you have the truffle recipe, which we'll talk to maybe in just a little bit. We're going to take a break in just a few minutes, or in about 20 seconds, but we can talk about the truffle recipe. And when we get back, we can talk about some more of these other recipes, because I think it's nice to show people they're not that intimidating. I looked through your cookbook, and they seem pretty straightforward and pretty easy to do for the home cook. So I'm hoping that's true.
That's my goal, simplify as much as possible.
Good. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will talk more with Susie about Appalachian food. You're listening to WCHL 97.9 FM. Welcome back. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef. I am Chef Kelly Taylor with my co-host, Chef Janice Escott, and our guest today, Susie Gott-Segaray. We were talking when we left off about her beautiful new cookbook, which is out. We didn't talk about where people could buy it, and we should do that in a minute, but it's called Appalachian Appetite. And why don't you tell people where they can buy it first, and then we'll get into some of the recipes in there.
Certainly. Well, it's available in all the bookstores, I hope. I'm working on making sure that it is available in some of the smaller privately owned bookstores. Of course, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, through Target online. You can also find it through my website online. If you go to schoolofculinaryarts.org, you can get it directly from me. It's the only way I make more than a dollar a book, so yeah. I'll say that.
That's a good idea.
And I'm slowly making the rounds of various bookstores, so I'll be at, is it Park Street Books in Charlotte, coming up the 25th of January, and I'll be in Knoxville on the 28th of January, and also doing a culinary demonstration at Williams-Sonoma in Knoxville at that time. Have yet to set up something in Chapel Hill, so if anybody's listening and would like to host something, I'd be glad to
I would like to host that. You when we have the market up and running.
That's a great idea.
Come back.
And it's grand.
If you'd like to come back, that would be great.
With pleasure.
So your book is really interesting because you're a musician. We had talked a little bit about that earlier. You have a little musical interlude, or whatever we're going to call it, introduction before your recipes. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, music and food being mutual passions, that's hard to think of one without another. And any gathering where find myself organizing an event. Of course, the music has got to be a part of it because that's part of the conviviality of a meal. And anytime you get people around a table together, eventually it will break down into stories and songs. So I figure might as well make that intentional from the start. And one of the other ventures that I do from time to time called the Asheville Wine Experience is based on the concept of pairing a great dish with a great wine with a great piece of music. So all three of those are chosen together to complement each other. And this particular book, I have introduced each chapter with a song that has a food theme in it, such as Old Joe Clark or Sally Gooden or That's What I Like About the South or Cornbread, Molasses, and Sassafras Tea. There are many, many songs to choose from.
And these are all traditional Appalachian songs.
Pretty much, except for That's What I Like About the South. Most of them are traditional.
Cornbread, molasses, and sassafras tea. That's got a great name.
It does.
It's got a great ring to it. So yeah, the refrain goes, cornbread, molasses, and sassafras tea, cornbread, molasses, and sassafras tea. And so, of course, there's cornbread recipes and molasses recipes and sassafras tea recipes in the book.
And the cornbread, which is the argument of the South and the North. So which cornbread do you fall under?
I do not have sugar in mine, but I'll have sorghum on the table.
Oh, okay.
And I did read something recently about that Kathleen Purvis wrote in the Charlotte Observer. And her take on that was that it's not necessarily just a northern and southern thing. It is also often a black or white thing. I would say there's been a bit of crossover because I think when some of the African Americans ended up in the North, they ended up actually modifying their recipes to incorporate a Northern taste, which was perhaps more affluent and might include sugar in the cornbread because they had it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Southerners, the Appalachians, didn't necessarily have cornbread. I mean, they didn't have sugar to squander. So
squandering.
So that may have been a reason for that separation from the outset, and that we've forgotten about that. Mm-hmm. It may or it may not be. It's a theory.
So you put sorghum on the table to put on the cornbread.
Yes.
I put honey.
Ah.
So it's the same idea.
Sure.
Where you have that little sweet touch to it.
Maple syrup's not bad either if you're from New England.
That's the North. Yeah.
Right.
Back and forth.
Right,
sorghum exactly. syrup is a really interesting thing.
It's delicious.
That you only find around. I had never run into sorghum syrup until I moved here years ago.
I haven't either.
That was
but
really
I'm hooked.
Interesting find.
Right. And I've introduced it to people because it's something that people from the North don't even know about it all.
Right. So sorghum, for those who are not familiar with what it is a cane, and it is a cousin to the sugar cane. So most molasses is made from sugar cane, and sorghum molasses is made from sorghum cane. And it's the same, as I recall, it's the same genus, a different species. I could be wrong. It might be a subspecies of the same plant. And next time we talk, I'll know that, I hope. But in any case, it's very close. And it's a slightly more delicate flavor. Interestingly enough, I know we'll morph into this conversation shortly. There has got to be some chemical component in molasses that is akin to the chemical component, one of the chemical components in a truffle, because when I smell a truffle, I think of sorghum frequently and vice versa.
And you brought a truffle, and when we were on a break, we opened it up and smelled it, and I had the same reaction. I was like, wait, this is not, there's something else I'm smelling other than what I expect to smell from a truffle. And I think that's absolutely right. They have that smell of molasses, or that has that other kind of, it was a sweeter smell rather than a real earthy kind of smell that I'm used to when I think of truffles.
It probably depends even where it's grown.
Sure. And how long it's been out of the earth.
Of course.
And where is this truffle
this
from?
One?
A big, beautiful black
yes.
truffle that is the size of a
golf ball.
It's
it is.
A very generous golf ball, actually.
Yes,
between golf ball and tennis ball. So
see,
for
you
anybody
open that and I can already smell
truffle savvy out there and is starting to salivate, let's make you salivate a little bit more.
Yes.
We've got this, we're passing this around, waving it under our noses right here, and I'd like to share with you a little bit of what that might smell like, taste like. So if you imagine this incredibly pungent, earthy, floral combination, of sensual goodness. I can go on and on and on. It is something that can be overwhelming if used in great quantity, which is why, fortunately, we can use a very small amount of it to make a huge difference in what we're preparing as an accent. This particular truffle came from Franklin and Betty Garland, who live not far from us at all in Hillsboro. And they are a very interesting story. Franklin is from Guatemala. Betty is from this region, from Appalachia. And they began Garland truffles a good many years back, started experimenting with growing truffles in the U.S. in the late 70s and produced their first Perigord truffle here in North Carolina in Hillsboro in 1992, if I'm remembering correctly. And since, there have been a large number of people who have become interested in truffle cultivation here in the U.S. You know, we associate this with France and Italy and Spain and various
sort of wild truffle hunting cultivated.
Right. So there are indigenous truffles in the U.S. There are wild truffle species, not necessarily as flavorful and potent as the Perigord truffle or the Italian white truffle, the Alba truffle. However, with a bit of scientific knowledge and a bit of cultivation knowledge, agricultural knowledge, and the daring to take on a venture like this, there is the possibility of truffle cultivation here in the U.S. And our area lends itself quite well to that. Franklin at one point managed to get a grant for ex-tobacco farmers and provide truffle trees for several plantations here. And this has been several years back. And the unfortunate thing is that discoveries are being made all the time along the way. The Eastern filbert blight affected a lot of the trees that were planted that were truffle infected, because the truffle, of course, Well, I say, of course, for those who do not know, this is the truffle, the fungus that grows underground, and it has a host tree, which frequently is the hazelnut, either a hazelnut or an oak tree. Those are the two.
We have to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll talk about it a little bit more, because I don't think most people know how truffles grow. They just think of pigs, maybe, wandering through the woods looking for one. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I am Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott and our guest today, Susie Gottsegg-Garay. We are talking all about truffles now in lead up to the Asheville Truffle Experience, which Susie is putting on, I believe, in February, which we will talk to. But before we took our break, we were just starting to explain truffles. Not the chocolate truffles, the truffles that are they a fungus?
They are a fungus.
So we are now talking about, normally people are thinking about, when they think about these types of truffles, they think of France and Italy, and that they're sought out in the wild. You have to have pigs or some animal to smell them, and they dig them up and those kinds of things. But in the U.S., there's a very enterprising man. Husband and wife, and that's Garland Truffles you were talking about in Hillsboro, that figured out how to grow the trees that you can then grow the truffles on. Is that correct?
More or less.
Yeah.
it's a long...
Sure, but I mean, there is a whole new setup, because it's an actual orchard, like you're producing, you're growing a bunch of trees.
A very specific kind of tree,
a crop,
too. What is that tree?
So it's a very complex story, and it's way more than we have time to go into today, but... let me say that there are several key figures here. Franklin and Betty, having been really the pioneers in this area, along with Tom Michaels in East Tennessee with Tennessee Truffle and Charlie Lefevre in Oregon, who deals mostly with Oregon truffles, but also has a nursery, as does Franklin Garland, a nursery that provides seedlings that people can plant and then attempt to grow a truffle orchard.
And they're growing, before we left, on hazelnuts. Trees here.
Hazelnuts and oaks.
Okay.
And I will also mention John and Pat Martin, who are in Virginia, who have a truffle nursery as well. I believe they deal uniquely in oaks. So the advantage of growing your truffles in conjunction with an oak tree is that the oak is more hardy and does not have the risk of developing the eastern filbert blight, which has unfortunately ravished some of the truffle plantations that were started early on before folks knew that this is something they would have to contend with. However, there, not to disclose all of those who have worked so hard to develop them, their secrets, there are ways of cultivating resistant plants so that the hazelnuts can, we hope, produce viable truffles in a few years. And the hazelnut produces more quickly than the oak tree, which usually takes about 10 years from plantation to harvest. The hazelnut is more around the six-year mark, give or take, depending on what your growing conditions are. And of course, as an agricultural venture, there are lots of variables, including skunks and raccoons and various deer and animals that might get in. And
you need to just hunt them and cook them according to
exactly. Particularly if they've been eating truffles, they would be really delicious.
And they grow, and the truffles grow under the ground.
They do.
Do they actually grow akin to the roots or away from them or actually on the roots themselves?
The seedlings are infected, shall we say, with the mycelium, the truffle mycelium, and they grow in symbiotic relationship with their host tree. So this means, of course, since they're underground, our noses are not necessarily sensitive enough to detect them, and you have to have a trained dog or a trained pig in order to find them when they are ripe. And so there's always a bit of a guessing game of whether you might have truffles under your tree or not. There's something known as brûlé, which means a burned area at the base of your tree, which is indicative that there is something happening there. And I will add that our soil in this area, apart from around Pinehurst, where it's a more sandy soil, and East Tennessee, it's a little more of a limestone soil. But in general, the soil in this area has to be treated with lime, treated very heavily with lime to change the pH. And so it is a very labor-intensive undertaking to get the stuff started. And there is, I will let you know of another organization in the area which is working hard to share information and doing a lot of research to try to figure out what is going to be the best way to cultivate truffles here in this area, and that is NATGA, the North American Truffle Growers Association, that is based in North Carolina and also has members from all over the country. And that was an organization that was started by Franklin and Betty Garland and has then been adopted by Jane Morgan Smith, who has Keep Your Fork Farm in King, North Carolina, and also produces she has produced a few truffles. She had Martha Stewart down and did a show with her several years back. She has truffle butter available, which she sells through Whole Foods, and truffle honey and truffle salt as well.
What was her name for her product?
Jane Morgan Smith, Keep Your Fork Farm.
That's great, because people could actually go and get that in the store.
They can, yes.
So tell us, you are putting on a weekend extravaganza all in honor of the truffle.
Exactly.
And the amount of work that it takes to get a truffle.
So I'll go back to Franklin and Betty again and honor them and give them credit for having held the first truffle festival in Asheville several years back. I believe it was 8 years ago. They held three festivals in a row, and then things sort of fell by the wayside due to a lot of variables, and nothing happened for a couple of years. And I thought, well, what a pity, we don't want to let this amazing experience evaporate just when we were starting to pique a few people's interest. So I picked it up myself 3 years ago, and this will be the third year running that I have organized something. And we started out incorporating the educational component of it as well, and involving NATGA. This, at the particular time, they hold their conference separately. They will actually be holding a truffle growing conference the first weekend of February this year, and I'm holding the culinary extravaganza the last weekend of February, the 24th through the 26th in Asheville. And my goal in this is to educate people's palates, because when the truffles are produced, and a lot of farms are on the cusp of maybe producing a truffle any time now, and when it's produced, people have to know
what to do
with it, and why they do cost a little bit more than other normal ingredients, and be willing to pay for it, because that's what's going to keep the farms going and bring truffles to a higher level here of production, we hope, in the nearby future.
I agree. People definitely need to learn what to do with truffles. What would you recommend as a starter? Like, if I wanted to do something with truffles, I've never eaten a truffle. I don't have any idea what they taste like, what to do with them. Where would you even send somebody to start?
Truffles like fat. A fat really helps to bring out the flavor and disperse the molecules and bring them to life. They also like gentle heat. So you don't want to overcook them, because that will almost kill the flavor. You don't want ingredients that are too powerful, like lots of hot pepper or cilantro, perhaps, because that will mask the flavor. You want something actually that is very simple and bland, but that is an excellent host for that pungency. So potatoes are excellent. Pasta is excellent.
Eggs.
Rice is excellent. Eggs, of course, that's classic. Eggs are a little bit more flavorful in and of themselves than rice, pasta, and potatoes. So rice, pasta, and potatoes are wonderful bases for enhancing what little truffle you might have to grate and incorporate in them.
Yes, there's just a little that we're probably going to get. It is an expensive ingredient.
It is an expensive ingredient.
People are starting to understand, which is what they will be doing even more at your extravaganza, that they are starting to understand what it takes to produce truffles. And that's why the price is the price.
Right. And it is very worth it. I say, once you have tasted a truffle, you are spoiled for life, and you'll be forever seeking that flavor again.
Well, it's a very distinctive flavor, one that you really
it's
can't
like
replicate.
It's like nothing else.
Yeah, it really I can't think of things that taste like a truffle. at all. I mean, it has some similar smells to some things, but it is its own distinctive flavor.
It is, and it has many, many different flavor components. And this is why a lot of people whose only experience with truffles may have been truffle oil, which is largely synthetic, where maybe just one or two or three flavors have been isolated and recreated synthetically. When you taste a truffle, the difference is enormous because you have hundreds of different flavor components coming together.
Well, we have to take a break on that, and we will return in just a little bit. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef on WCHL 97.9. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I'm Kelly Taylor, my co-host Janice Escott, and our guest Susie Godsegaray. When we left off, we were talking about truffles and the difference, really, a little bit. We were just starting to get into the difference between real truffle products and synthetic truffle products. And a lot of the things that you can find in the stores are synthetic. I just wanted to quickly give a description about, or an explanation about what you mean, the difference between a real truffle product and a synthetic one, so somehow people could figure out what they're looking at, what they're buying.
Okay, well, I'll give that an attempt, not being a chemist by training. Forgive me if I say the wrong thing. But what I'm referring to as a chemical reproduction of certain elements of the truffle flavor, which of course might come close, but they can never have that total, the total wham of different flavors that hit you when you eat a real truffle. Mm-hmm. So, and part of this is it's hard to produce a truffle oil with natural truffle without running the risk of contamination or botulism, and you really want to have a product that is safe to use. So there's an element in that, and of course it's a cost issue too. If you have only tasted truffle oil, please try a real truffle one day, if you possibly can. And truffle salt is often a little bit closer to, it's easier to produce a truffle salt without running that risk of botulism than a truffle oil. So I'd certainly want to remind people that you can find that from Jane Morgan Smith at Keep Your Fork Farm if you are in this area. And also her truffle butter. We talked about different ingredients that are good to pair truffles with that are excellent hosts, shall we say, on the plate to the truffle. And cream is another one, of course, yeah. Anything that having to do with cream. So if you're doing a cream sauce, ice cream, that's another, if for the sweet tooth, that's another ingredient as well.
People who actually want to try truffles, I would say that your Asheville truffle experience would be the place to do it. So why don't we tell our listeners what the website is first so people can see that and get information about it if they'd like to attend.
Absolutely. So it's AshevilleTruffle.com. And called the Asheville Truffle Experience. And we are starting out on the 24th of February with a couple of welcome sessions, one probably at the Chamber of Commerce. And I will say that I'm still fine-tuning all the sessions, so there might be a few adjustments here. This is what I anticipate doing. We'll have an initial welcome at the Chamber of Commerce, followed by an appetizer mixer at the Marketplace on Wall Street, which is a marvelous restaurant owned by Chef William Disson. And if you don't know his work, please look up what he's doing because he does wonderful things as well. On Saturday, we'll have a number of things on the 25th that are based at the Haywood Park Hotel in downtown Asheville. And we'll start out with an educational system. We'll have a hands-on culinary experience thrown in there and a truffle market with truffle products. And we'll end off with a big truffle dinner extravaganza at Isis Bistro, which is downstairs in the Haywood Park Hotel. And I do have a menu for that. Let's see if I can share that with you. We will be sampling a Maine lobster bisque with truffled potato gnocchi and tarragon, deep-fried poached farm egg with truffled red flannel hash and chervil, seared diver scallop with slow-braised beef short rib crepe and winter greens and truffle emulsion, black truffle caramel panna cotta, amaretti cookies, and truffle ganache. And this is by Chef Duane Fernandez at Isis Bistro. And all all of this will be paired with wines if you so wish. And that's just one of the things going on during the weekend.
You just rattled off that menu, and I think I wanted to go hear it again. People will need to read that, I think, to really absorb all of those things that you just said, because there are some fantastic dishes.
Oh, fantastic. So it's on the website.
That will soon be posted on the website. I will do that this evening when I get home.
Yes,
that's hot off the press. So you're the first to hear it.
And delicious.
On Sunday, we will likely be taking an expedition out to a truffle orchard in Waynesville, which is a test orchard. They have not yet produced truffles, but they are on the cusp, and they have some Brulé. And with luck, I will have some truffle dogs lined up to do a demonstration of how they work.
Yeah, that will be really fascinating. If you've never seen that, you should really, if you can make it, it's a fascinating experience. I mean, looking at the truffles and seeing where they're growing and seeing the dogs, it's really something that you just don't do. Yeah. It's really a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Most people have to go abroad to be able to go truffle hunting, really.
Exactly.
So it's a really fantastic and unique experience that you can't really get that many places around this country, at least. So people should take you up on that. What is the hands-on culinary experience? I think you said that on Saturday.
Yes. So I'll have a mini class with tasting, of course, at the end. And I hope to do this at Kachina 24 on Wall Street. I have yet to tighten up those details, but Brian Canapelli is the chef there, and he has worked with several of the truffle events that have happened in Nashville in most recent years, and is a fabulous chef who gives a French treatment to Appalachian ingredients, which is one of the things that I try to feature in the Appalachian Appetite cookbook, which we have in front of us here as well.
But you have other cultures represented in that cookbook. We were looking early at the flan, which is a truffle flan. What is the name of the recipe? Maybe you can talk about
that. Yes, the Tennessee corn and truffle flan. That is a recipe that comes from Tom Michaels and Vicki Blizzard. Tom Michaels being the fellow who cultivates in East Tennessee, Tennessee truffles. And he was featured in a New York Times article in 2007, I believe, an article by Molly O'Neill, if you want to look that up. It's a fascinating story. He has had a really productive orchard for a period of time. And then, unfortunately, the hazelnut blight came through and has affected production at present. But there, he is one of the masterminds behind developing ideas for how we can go forth and have a viable truffle production here in the U.S. in the future. So
farmers are very enterprising.
Yes, certainly. And you've always got to play with the variables. And it might be that we will go feature a different species of truffle more heavily in the future. The tuber melanosporum, which is the black Perigord truffle that we so love and revere, it is a little bit harder to grow than, say, the pecan truffle, which is another experimentation going on at the moment. Pecan trees being, of course, native to here. Anyway, there are many possibilities.
That's fascinating. I'd love to try pecan. Yeah. Sounds delicious. So would you share that recipe real quick?
Certainly.
Gist of it?
Okay. Well,
like a minute.
Okay. So you're going to combine flour, cornmeal, sugar, baking soda, sea salt. You can leave the sugar out if you don't like that sweetness. frozen corn or fresh corn, depending on what you have and what the season is. Melted butter, large beaten eggs, cayenne pepper, sour cream, parmesan, and of course some freshly shaved black winter truffle or tuber melanosporum, if you can possibly find that. Of course, you can do the recipe without it, but it's much better with.
Well, the flan is savory, so you start off by saying it's a savory flan.
Right.
I think a lot of people think of it as a dessert.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. So yes, it would be an appetizer here, savory appetizer. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to whisk all that together and cook it in a bain-marie, which is a water bath in the oven at a slow temperature, and bring it out, and then you can serve that with whatever wine or fresh green salad or whatever you might like to augment that
with. Yeah, it's really, flans aren't really that complicated, too, which is a good introduction, I think. And it really does impress people when you make a flan, and that one in particular sounds very fancy, but still is very doable.
Very basic, and you can use as much or as little truffle as you wish. And of course, if you don't have truffle, spice it up with a little Bunton's bacon or whatever else you might have on hand.
Which is always a hit.
That would be delicious, actually.
It would be. It's a great idea.
Well, we have to finish now, unfortunately. We've talked a lot about truffles, and I hope that our listeners will go up to the website. Tell us one more time before we wrap up. Asheville Truffle?
AshevilleTruffle.com. And again, the weekend is February 24th through 26th.
And the book, Appalachian Appetite.
And Appalachian Appetite, you can find at schoolofculinaryarts.org or, of course, on Amazon or wherever your local bookstore is. And if you have a local bookstore, Asheville, we have Malaprops. Please support your small local bookstore, too.
Thank you, Susie, very much. Please like us on our Facebook page, Yes to the Chef. And we're co-host Kelly Taylor, natural chef and instructor, and Janice Escott, Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. Happy cooking, Kelly.
Happy cooking, Jan.
Happy cooking, Susie.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Here's got your Toradora. Oh, Dora. Try the bologna, Tony. Hey, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house. I'll fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food will fill you. Stay in the kitchen alone, work my